Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We continue looking at the book Saints, The Standard of Truth, a history book published by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Today, we're going to look at one small segment that is found beginning on page 315, and it only goes to half of the page of 319, and it deals with a man by the name of Elijah Abel. And I'll tell you, Eric, when I read this, I was wondering, now, that's interesting how they just throw the story about Elijah Abel in between two segments without a whole lot of explanation, just to tell a very faith-promoting story about Elijah Abel and an experience he had when he was on his mission in New York. And it starts off at the bottom of page 315, talking about a dream that he had. And he has this dream of this convert that he baptized. He baptized a woman named Eunice and her husband Charles. And he is awakened, according to the story, on page 315. He had a troubling dream. He saw Eunice Franklin, and that she was racked with doubt about the Book of Mormon and Joseph Smith. Her uncertainty robbed her of sleep. She could not eat. She felt deceived. Well, the story goes on page 316 to say that Elijah then sets out for New York immediately to go talk to this person that he helped win to Mormonism. Why don't we begin at the top of page 316?
Elijah set out for New York immediately. He had met Eunice and her husband Charles that spring while preaching in their town. The sermon Elijah had preached to them was rough and uneven. As a black man born in poverty, he had found few opportunities for schooling.
And this is why I think this story is included. Elijah Abel pops up, and he's almost as fast, he's going to go away. But they throw this in here, and this is why, I think. When it says, as a black man born in poverty. Well, if you were to go to the endnotes in the book Saints, it would refer you to a Gospel Topics historical essay titled simply Elijah Abel. And it's spelled A-B-L-E, sometimes it's spelled A-B-E-L, sometimes it's Abels. Nonetheless, they use the A-B-L-E spelling. But here's what's fascinating to me. When you go look at the Gospel Topics essays, it gives you a little bit more of a background of who this individual is. And to be quite honest, this is one of the times when I think this book does the reader a huge disservice by not giving more information. What do you know about Elijah Abel from what you read on these few pages is what? That he was unschooled and he was a black man born in poverty and he served a mission. And also as we get into this, he also held the Melchizedek priesthood and so on. But look at what the Gospel Topics essay fills in for us. Start with little is known.
Little is known about Abel's early life. He was born in Maryland sometime between 1808 and 1812 to Andrew and Delilah William Abel. Abel had one black great-grandparent, apparently on his father's side.
Now, let me stop you there, because Elijah Abel is oftentimes held up to show that Joseph Smith did not have a prejudice towards those of black African heritage. They'll say, see, Joseph Smith was a very tolerant person. It was Brigham Young that introduced that later on, and they always want to excuse Joseph Smith as if he had no prejudicial ideas, that he did not share those prejudicial ideas of his day.
Certainly, the church gives us that idea by writing a Gospel Topics essay explaining that it was Brigham Young and laying all of the baggage at his feet.
Exactly. But notice what it says here in this essay that deals specifically with Elijah Abel. Abel had one black great-grandparent, apparently on his father's side. Now think about this. One black great-grandparent. Now, what would that make Elijah Abel if you figure it out? One-eighth
and
black?
One-eighth black, but that would be the very most because it's possible that that one great-grandparent wasn't fully black either. So maybe they were 75% black, so he'd even be more diluted.
Now, there's one picture that is floating around on the internet of Elijah Abel. I only know of one photograph. There could be others, but the one that you see most often shows a man who, if you did not know who the individual was, and you were asked, is this man black or could he be white? Could he be, who knows, what race? You probably wouldn't know from the photograph. And I've read on accounts on Elijah Abel that he did not have what some would say are black features. This could be why he was able to serve as a missionary and able to speak to a white population who, let's be honest, even in the North, many held prejudicial views also. Just because they were in the North doesn't mean that they didn't hold those, because many people, unfortunately, did in the United States during this time period. Now, that could be why he was able to be ordained. I don't know if Joseph Smith knew this. There could be information out there that I'm not aware. But maybe Joseph Smith ordains him, not seeing a problem at all. Now, there is a drawing of Elijah Abel that is floating around on the internet that doesn't look anything like the photograph of Elijah Abel, which does show a man with very African features. I don't think that drawing, it comes close to what Elijah Abel really looked like. I don't know who made the drawing. I don't even know why it's even popular. To me, it doesn't reflect what he looked like at all if you go by this photograph. But apparently, Brigham Young must have known, because as this Gospel Topics essay goes on, it talks about how in 1842, Elijah Abel moves to Cincinnati, Ohio.
In 1842, Abel moved to Cincinnati, Ohio, where he worked as a carpenter and was active in the local branch of the church. In 1847, he married Mary Ann Adams, who was also of mixed race. Together, the couple had four children. In 1853, the Abel family migrated to Utah. During the next three decades, Abel was active in his Salt Lake City ward, worked on the Salt Lake Temple, and served another mission to Ohio. In 1852, a year before the Abels arrived in Utah, Brigham Young publicly announced a policy of withholding the priesthood from black males. Abel retained his priesthood office and standing, but when he applied to President Young for permission to receive his temple endowment and be sealed to Mary Ann, the request was denied. In 1879, a second request from Abel was denied by President John Taylor. Abel remained faithful until his passing on December 25th, 1884.
Now, it's interesting to me that this story doesn't become a part of the story that talks about Elijah Abel. You would think this is pretty important. This is pretty controversial. If you're going to talk about this man, let's tell at least enough of the story so we have a pretty good handle of what's going on at this time. And here in this book, it doesn't mention any of this controversy at all. It just merely talks about Elijah Abel and this dream that he had and his wanting to go and talk to these converts that he had baptized previously. It's a faith-promoting story, but I don't think it tells us enough about the individual. And when it does describe him as a black man born in poverty, I think it should have been up to the church to tell that story and to tell the controversy surrounding him. So here is a man who is serving the church. He goes to Brigham Young. He wants to receive his temple endowment, and Brigham Young refuses. Brigham Young refuses him. Now we need to go into the next paragraph, because the next paragraph, I think, also becomes a bit misleading when it comes to the word endowment.
His sermon had thrilled...
No. Oh. No, but like other missionaries.
Oh, I'm sorry. But like other missionaries, he had been ordained to the Melchizedek priesthood, participated in ordinances in the Kirtland Temple, and received the endowment of power. What he lacked in education, he made up for in faith and in the power of the Spirit.
Now, if that's all you had to go by, and you're an average Latter-day Saint, and you read the phrase endowment of power, would you know exactly what that is? What is the endowment of power? Because it shares the same word as the endowment ceremony, which we know came about around 1840 in Nauvoo, would you think that Elijah Abel may have participated in the endowment ceremony, and because of that, he was endowed with power? I would think probably many Latter-day Saints would be confused by that, and I would think even more non-Latter-day Saints would be confused by that. But the fact is, Elijah Abel, by what we just read out of the Gospel Topics essay, he was denied to go through the endowment ceremony.
Denied twice by two different presidents, showing that he really wanted to be able to have the same privilege as his as the white brothers and sisters that belong to the church.
Now, let's explain quickly what the endowment of power is, because there's a Gospel Topics essay on this as well. The first paragraph.
A revelation to Joseph Smith in 1831 commanded early church members to, quote, go forth among all nations, end quote, and gather Israel. Before they were sent forth, the Lord promised to endow them with power from on high. The promised endowment encompassed several events in early 1836, including a Pentecost-like season surrounding the dedication of the House of the Lord in Kirtland, Ohio. Although Joseph Smith later introduced a temple ordinance he also called an endowment, the phrase endowment of power is often associated with the outpouring of spiritual gifts and the restoration of priesthood keys in Kirtland.
I think in this particular case, because that word endowment can be confusing, the book, Saints, should have explained that and made it very clear that Elijah Abel was not participating in the endowment ceremony, that this endowment of power was a completely different type of event. But let's get back to Elijah Abel's requesting of Brigham Young to participate in the endowment ceremony and to be sealed to his wife, and he is rejected. Brigham Young dies in August of 1877. The third president is John Taylor. He goes to John Taylor now in 1879, as this Gospel Topics essay explains, and he's again refused by John Taylor. Why do you think that would be? Well, this is probably why. This is what John Taylor believed regarding those like Elijah Abel. And after the flood, he said, we are told that the curse that had been pronounced upon Cain was continued through Ham's wife as he had married a wife of that seed. And why did it pass through the flood? Because it was necessary that the devil should have a representation upon the earth as well as God. That's John Taylor, the third president of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, as spoken on August 28th, 1881.
You want to keep going?
Yeah.
Bill, you mentioned the endowment of power, but when it says in Saints that he participated in ordinances in the Kirtland Temple, those are not the same as what Latter-day Saints will practice today. So again, I think you're right on this. Very confusing for anybody who's trying to understand why in the world is this story put here. I think it's put here for the very reason that you said. You've got a black man who looks like he's being accepted. Well, for many Latter-day Saints, they're thinking that he's participated in temple endowments, and that's not true.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.